Hello there, my friends. This is Tim Binall of BinallofAmerica.com with another edition of Binall of America Audio. It is June 10th, 2006. My guest this week is Royce Myers. He is the editor and creator of UFOWatchdog.com. It's always been a favorite website of mine. I check it out as often as I can to make sure I know what's going on in the world of ufology because Royce Myers is on top of it. They specialize in investigating the claims of some of the more outrageous personalities in the field of the esoteric, and often find that there's more than meets the eye to these stories, and there's a lot of smoke and mirrors that go on, and that the people making some crazy claims are often just plain crazy themselves. Let me give you a little bit of background on Royce Myers. Royce Myers is the editor and creator of UFOWatchdog.com. He has an occupational and educational background in law enforcement and criminalistics, and holds an AAS degree in criminal justice. Royce has conducted field investigations into cattle mutilations and crop phenomenon, working in conjunction with the BLT research team. UFO Watchdog comes to you from the home of Royce and is operated by him, with the occasional assistance of friends, fellow researchers and investigators, and other contributors. And no matter what anyone says, the government is not funding Royce as a debunker, as is the fantasy of those who overestimate their importance. His website is UFOWatchdog.com. It is one of the more controversial websites out there in ufology. I'm a longtime fan of UFOWatchdog.com. As Binall of America Audio got rolling along, I said, let's get Royce Myers on the show. Let's talk about UFOWatchdog.com, because you don't hear from Royce Myers on many other radio shows. That's why we wanted to be different here at Binall of America Audio and bring you the UFO Watchdog himself, Royce Myers. So without any further ado, let's rock and roll. This interview was conducted on May 23rd, 2006. Royce Myers on Binall of America Audio. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another edition of Binall of America Audio. I want to welcome as my special guest this week, Royce Myers. He is the brainchild behind UFOWatchdog.com. Their tagline is, sometimes you need a second opinion, and they focus on really keeping an eye on ufology, the field, and rooting out some of the troublemakers that emerge in ufology and setting the record straight on some of these stories that come out, and you're sort of wondering, what's the story with that? And then it turns out the guy's a liar. Chances are you heard about it at UFOWatchdog.com, because that's what Royce Myers does. They're watching over the UFO field, thankfully, because somebody has to do it, let's face it. Chances are you've sort of seen a little bit of an influence from their website on BinallofAmerica.com, because I definitely, as I was building up the website, I was always checking out UFOWatchdog.com because I appreciate all their work that they do. So welcome to the show, Royce Myers. Thanks for being on the show.
Well, thank you for having me.
Let's start out with your background, how you got into ufology, and what led up to you starting UFOWatchdog.com.
Well, I first got interested in UFOs in 1994. I was driving with a friend of mine very late at night. It was a weekday, and this is down in southern Oregon. And I'd had a sighting of a very unusual object. And after that, I had started reading just about every UFO book I could get my hands on and trying to find whatever information I could. And I've done some cattle mutilation investigations and some work for the BLT research folks. And after that, I had decided, well, I need to go to a UFO conference because that's what everybody does. They get interested, they read books, they exhaust all the resources for books almost, and decide that, well, I need to go to a conference because the people who know about this stuff are going to be there.
Yeah.
And so I went to a conference down in Los Angeles, and I want to say about 95. And I kind of had an epiphany of sorts when I was there. What I saw, I really didn't like. And I told this, I was down in McMinnville, Oregon, for the UFO Fest over this last weekend, and I told people that I hate UFO conferences. You know, a couple of chuckles and a couple of weird looks from it. And one of the main reasons that I came just to really not like the whole UFO conference bit was that there's a lot of sensationalism. And they were very conspiracy-based, and I stay away from conspiracies because everybody associates conspiracies with nuts.
Yeah.
And the UFO conferencing seemed more interested in promoting UFO personalities who were making these god-awful sensationalistic claims as opposed to promoting people who I felt were a lot more credible. Mm-hmm. And I also there was also this apathy in terms of when somebody's credibility was really questioned, or there was reason to believe that it was a hoax, they would host these folks anyway. And so when I started saying this, I was pretty concerned about it because I have a pretty solid interest in UFOs.
Yeah.
And so I started a small website. It was called Exposé, the Watchdog of Ufology, and it was a small personal website that I had. And after a while, what I was doing was I was publishing my opinions on cases and some of the things that I had found and experienced in the field, and it was starting to kind of get popular, which I was really surprised. A lot of people were tuning in and listening to what I had to say. And so later, sometime in 99, I had scaled it up to UFOWatchdog.com, changed the name and the look of the site.
Yeah.
And kind of became, in some sense, a better business bureau for UFOs.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't sell newsletters or predictions or website subscriptions, lectures, DVDs, books. I don't sell any of that stuff. It's one of the few sites that has a lot of, I think, decent content on it that doesn't charge for the content.
Mm-hmm.
And my goal was to further serious debate and to expose the frauds and the charlatans and the snake oil salesmen and all the other drivel in the field as much as I could to hopefully take it to the next level to where we could get rid of some of these morons and move along and start really focusing on the credible body of UFO evidence.
Yeah. And like you said, the general apathy of people in the esoteric fields when someone's exposes a hoax, there's also a lot of zealous folks who will just they will swear by somebody no matter what. What's been the reaction of ufology to your website and your work? What's been the reaction of just not only the folks in like the names and the personalities, but also the everyday people? Have you gotten a lot of reaction from people?
I've gotten good reactions from the majority of folks. I get, once in a while you get this kind of crazy slanted email or rambling or whatever else. But for the most part, it was very well received by a lot of people. And I found that there were a lot of people out there that were as sick and tired as I was of all the nonsense that was going on.
Yeah.
And so I've got a pretty good readership. This website is just—it's amazing. It's almost got like 4 million hits.
Oh wow!
It's nuts. I never in my wildest dreams thought that this website would garner that much attention, and I'm really glad it has because I think it's helped a lot of people find direction in the UFO field. Because if you just plunge into this like I did, you have no idea which way to go.
Mm-hmm.
Because there really isn't a lot of information out there on who's credible and who's not. And these are my opinions on my website, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very confusing field to get into where a lot of people are selling fluff UFO videos or other garbage and giving people bad information. And hopefully my website is a resource for folks to come to and say, oh, okay, and get some direction.
Yeah. And what's interesting about you is that you sort of, like you said, you started out on the internet. That's sort of where you've grown as a researcher. What's been, and when did you say you started that first expose website?
I probably in 97.
Oh, wow. So you've seen like almost, so it's been like what now? Almost 10 years, right?
The website? Yeah, just about. Just about. I've actually been interested in UFOs for since 94, since that first initial sighting. So I've been around it for about 12 years.
And how would you describe the evolution of ufology as a science on the internet? As the internet's grown and everything, how do you think ufology's adapted to using the internet?
I think it's just like anything else. There's a lot of bad information out there. There's a lot of good information, and it really doesn't take much. Anybody can get a computer, a keyboard, and plug in and get a website. It's just, I think it's helped in a lot of aspects because it's a lot easier to do investigations and to stay in contact with people.
Yeah.
And it's a great tool because you can go in, like now, it's amazing. Before, where people would never hear about a UFO case that happened in another country, you know, here in the United States. In another country, like, say, England or somewhere in Latin America or somewhere over in Europe, now they're able to go in and do a search, you know, on a number of search engines and pull up all kinds of news articles. So in that sense, it's a very useful tool for staying in contact with folks and getting more information. And on the other hand, though, it's also been not so good in terms of there are a lot of people who can put websites up now and make all sorts of outrageous claims and do their UFO commerce online and get their information out there a lot easier, too.
Yeah. And now, like, moving on to what UFO Watchdog's all about, like you said, you're sort of like the Better Business Bureau of ufology. What do you think motivates these people that come out of the woodwork with their bogus stories and their elaborate claims?
I think it's a couple of things. And in kind of looking at this whole field, I think what's really happened is that a lot of people have taken the acronym UFO and have kind of made it their own acronym as they've gone along. I mean, in the purest sense, it's an unidentified flying object. It's something in flight. We don't know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of other people, though, and this kind of covers both the skeptics and the believers in a lot of ways. It also covers those people whose motives are very questionable as far as I'm concerned. But some people think that UFO means undeniably from outer space, or some folks think it means unfounded foolish observations, where you know, anything you see can be explained.
Yeah.
And then there's the group that I kind of focus on, and I think some of them think that UFO stands for ulterior financial opportunity or it's kind of a fantasy outlet for them.
Yeah.
Where they tend to tell people what most folks want to hear,
mm-hmm.
and they capitalize on people believing it. And that's where a lot of that comes from. A lot of those folks like to get out there, they like to sell, they like to wine and dine you, and then they hit you with the bill.
Yeah. A lot of the people I talk to in ufology who are on the show and everything, it seems like a mantra a lot of times comes up that there's no money to be made in ufology. How do you work that in, that paradoxical thing in, with these hoaxers that are trying to make money? Is there money to be made in ufology, but it's all going to these phony baloney guys, or are they just sucking all the money, the small pool that's there, are they the ones that are getting the money from the people that are willing to spend, or how do you I'm at a loss for a word here, how do you fit that paradox in with what you've observed in the UFO field?
If there's no money to be made in UFOs, then why are there UFO conventions? Why are people selling UFO books and publishing them? Why are people hawking DVDs and newsletters? And why are people appearing at conferences? There is money to be made depending on where you're at. If you're one of the researchers who does this full-time, who is committed to finding answers, and who tends to live by a code of ethics, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
who wants to go out there, who wants to do a good job, who wants to report the facts to the public, those folks who do that full-time, I think it's very difficult for them to make a living. I'll tell you what, they're not getting rich. I'll guarantee you that.
Yeah.
On the other side of the coin, there are the folks that want to make the sensationalistic claims. They want to tell you all sorts of nonsense, and it goes back to telling people what they want to hear, kind of thing.
Yeah.
As their hook to reel you in. If these people aren't making money, then why are they still around? There is money to be made in UFOs, and it depends on what side of the fence you're on.
Mm-hmm.
If you're on the side where you're willing to tell people anything and everything so you can sell them a newsletter or a book or a DVD or a tape or a ticket to your lecture, those are the folks that are the problem in this field.
Yeah.
And in terms of money, here's a great example of this. A character named who was calling himself Dr. Jonathan Reed, and mm-hmm. we'll have time to discuss that later, who came into this field out of nowhere with all sorts of sensational claims, none of which he could prove and still can't, was the keynote speaker at a UFO conference in Nevada. And during that time, he sold out the place, 700 people, at $20 a pop.
Oh, wow.
How much money is that? It's $14,000. So in terms of, is there money to be made in UFOs? Yeah, there is, and it depends on how you're trying to make it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Why don't we talk a little bit about that Dr. Reed hoax, because that seems to be one of the biggest claims to fame for the UFOWatchdog.com website. You were the guys that really got on this story, tackled it, and really dissected it and broke the story that it was indeed a hoax. Why don't you, hopefully by now most people have forgotten about it, but let's refresh their memory about who Dr. Reed was and what the story was and the whole saga of the Dr. Reed story.
I got involved in this. I was out driving around late at night, like I was heading home, and I heard, I was listening to a late night radio program where this guy was on several times, and this guy comes on and says that he'd killed an alien in the woods in Washington State, and I believe it was November of 98 is when he was on, and he claimed that the incident happened October of 96.
Okay.
And he was accompanied by a fellow calling himself Robert Wraith. And he told of this encounter where he killed this alien in the woods of Washington State while he was out hiking with his dog. While he's out hiking with his dog starts going nuts, and this alien comes out and kills the dog. Well, Dr. Reed, not being too fond of this alien, having just killed his best friend, picks up a tree branch and clobbers this alien in the head. And then he sees this small UFO. Well, he's killed the alien, so he says. So he gets out a survival blanket, one of those silver blankets that conserves heat, and wraps this alien up, throws it in his Jeep, and drives it home and throws it in a freezer. And suddenly, the next thing we know, the alien comes back to life, the government's after him, and they've killed his friend, and they've ransacked his house, and they've taken all his evidence, and now Dr. Reed's on the run for his life.
Oh, man.
So that was the story, and this story garnered so much attention, it created such a fury among UFO folks. I was just amazed that this story made it as far as it did.
Yeah.
And I was just like, what? So I decided, well, I'm going to check into this because this doesn't sound quite right. Because during the interview, this gentleman named Robert, who was calling himself Robert Wraith, had kind of guided this Dr. Reed character through the program.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was scripted and they had practiced.
Yeah.
And so I started checking into it, and I talked to a lady named Laura Fine, who was representing herself as the manager for this Reed and Wraith character.
Okay.
For these two guys.
Yeah.
And I told her, I said, look, I have access to scientists and whatever else. If you would like to prove your story, I would be more than happy to help you out with that. And, of course, I got the answer I was expecting. Well, we're not interested in proving anything. And she got on the subject of doing a book and producing a video and doing lectures. And she said that they wanted to make a movie out of it. And so what I did was I baited her a little bit, and I said, hey, listen, and this is true, by the way. I know someone who's in the film business down in Los Angeles. And I brought up that person's name, and I said, hey, I know such and such who made this movie. You know, would you be interested in having him contact you? And she just, the conversation peaked from there. She was very happy to talk to me, and she wanted to keep talking about this movie deal. And so after that, I went, okay, I know exactly what this is. This is a couple of folks who are likely doing this to gain financially.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, okay, well, I'll check it out and see what's what. And so I started investigating this whole thing. And I found a number of things that were very, very wrong about Dr. Reed. And in doing this, I'll get to the short of it because we could talk about this for a good 2 hours easily.
Yeah.
Just this case alone. Well, when I started investigating the case, I found a number of problems with Dr. Reed and his evidence. He'd claimed that he had worked at a number of prestigious universities and had degrees from here and there. And, of course, you know, you couldn't find any of this because the bad guys had come and wiped all of his records clean, according to him.
Yeah.
And during this investigation, I also found out that his film wasn't quite what he was touting it to be. He'd had some stills, and what I did was he had published some of these still negatives to the internet, saying, see, these are the original negatives. And people were endorsing them as the real thing. And it was on Kodak Film, so I called Kodak. And I had a talk with one of their film reps and told him, hey, this is the time that the guy is claiming that he took these photos. Can you tell me when this film was manufactured?
Yeah.
And the guy said that in the time frame that Dr. Reed, quote-unquote, claimed that he took these photos, he couldn't have because the film wasn't even manufactured.
Huh.
So that sealed it for me right there.
Yeah.
I said, well, okay, we're done. the cat's out of the bag. Here we go. And so I started publishing articles about my findings on the internet, and I started catching some flack from some people. Suddenly, you know, and this is a big thing in the UFO field, suddenly when you start telling people what they don't want to hear, you're a government agent.
Yeah, yeah.
You work for the government, you're a government bad guy, or you're working for somebody else, and they're paying you to feed them disinformation, and it gets pretty ridiculous, no matter what evidence you have.
Mm-hmm.
And so from there, I continued my investigation and found out a number of other things. And a lesser-known piece in this story was that Dr. Reed had claimed that the government had yanked one of his teeth out and had replaced it with a fake tooth with a transmitter in it. And somebody supplied me with photos. Someone had contacted one of the investigators the so-called investigators that was involved in this whole Dr. Reed thing, and this investigator had supplied this person with these photos and this background story about this tooth. Well, this person forwarded it to me. He was nice enough to share it with me. And looking at it, it's a picture of a tooth that's been broken in half, and there's a small electronic-looking device in the middle of it. Well, I posted that on the website because, one, it doesn't even look like a real tooth that came out of any human being.
Yeah.
And the other thing was that I was interested in what that device was because it looked very familiar to me. Well, somebody had written me back saying that it's a transistor. You buy a Radio Shack for a buck, and somebody just snipped the ends off of it.
Yeah.
So that was another piece. So I continued to press on to try and find out who this guy was. I'd made a couple of trips up to Seattle, and one day I'm checking my email, and this guy writes saying, hey, I know who this clown is. And I said, okay, well,
yeah.
Who is he? And he said, call me and I'll tell you. So I called this gentleman and I talked to him, and he had a pretty interesting story that he had known this Jonathan Reed character, except his name wasn't Jonathan Reed. It was John Bradley Rutter. And he said that he had known this gentleman all of his life. And that this gentleman, during the time that he'd, or not all of his life, I'm sorry, for something like 12 years, he'd known him for a very long time. And said that this gentleman, who was posing as Dr. Reed, said that he was Dr. Jonathan Rutter and that he was a psychologist working graveyard doing evaluations for patients and making up treatment plans. And that was just, I don't know any psychiatrists that work at night.
Yeah.
Unless
yeah.
on call and going to a mental ward or whatever else.
Yeah.
So this gentleman, and his name's Bill Werner, told me, hey, I've known this guy for a long time. And I said, okay, well, can you prove it? And he said, absolutely.
Nice, yeah.
And this is what Mr. Werner told me. He said that Rutter's ex-fiancee's sister is about 25 minutes from you right now visiting some friends. I can call her and see if she wants to meet with you.
Nice.
And I said, okay, sure. So he put me in touch with this lady's sister, and I drove about a half hour from my home and met with this lady at a coffee shop. And I didn't know these people. I didn't know what was really going on. I thought, okay, you get a little paranoid when you're
yeah.
dealing with people that you don't know.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And so I was a little careful when I went up because these UFO people who pull this kind of stuff can be a little fanatical at times.
Mm-hmm.
And so I met with this lady, and we had coffee. She was very nice. And I said, okay, so can you prove that you know this guy? And she told me, the story that she told me was that Rutter had been her sister's fiancé for 15 years.
Oh, wow.
And had fooled them all for that period of time that he was a psychologist.
Whew.
That's quite a scam to be pulling off.
Yeah.
And So came the big question. I came back to her. I said, okay, can you prove it? And she said, sure. Well, she happened to have some family pictures with her that she'd brought down to show some friends of hers. Mm-hmm. And there were a ton of pictures of the esteemed Dr. Reed during the time that he was supposedly on the run. And they showed one photo showed him at a wedding party. Another photo showed him at a wedding dinner. And during the time frame that he claimed that he was on the run, he was hiding in Canada. He couldn't come above ground because the bad guys were out to get him. And it showed another one of them at a Thanksgiving dinner where he was clowning around with one of the children of the family. Yeah. And it was just, I was like, okay, well, I guess this kind of seals it.
Yeah.
And so in the middle of all this, before I wrote before I published my investigation, Dr. Reed had a number of supporters. We'll call him Dr. Reed because everybody, that's who they know him as.
Yeah, yeah.
He had a number of supporters, which I was very surprised at seeing some of these people supporting the story. One guy was Daniel Iaria, and I've never met this gentleman, and I tried to have some communication with him, and he wound up blocking my email because, again, people who you tell things that they don't want to hear will ignore you or call you a government agent.
Yeah.
And Daniel Iaria was a big supporter of the story. Huge. He invested a lot of his money in the story.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a number of other investigators that supported this tale. And one of them was a gentleman named Jaime Musan, who a lot of people are probably familiar with.
Yeah.
And as far as I know, to this day, even after I have published my investigation exposing who this gentleman really was and all of my evidence, there are people who still support the story, and Mr. Musan apparently is one of them. And after I did this expose, and one of the more comical parts of all this was Robert Rafe. I found out who he really was too. And there was another gentleman involved in this that they referred to as Dr. Harold Chacon.
Mm-hmm.
And they claim that Robert Rafe and this Dr. Harold Chacon character had never met. They met right after this, a few months after the story was on the radio.
Yeah.
And they had Dr. Chacon, who was supposed to be a microbiologist, examine this DNA, this alien DNA that Rutter supposedly had. And they found that it was unlike anything else and da-da-da-da-da. Well, I found out that Robert Rafe and this Harold Chacon character both worked at a gas station in Seattle. And there was some small little chat club group up in Seattle that had actually found this out. And they said that they found out that one of them worked there, and then they found out the other, or something like that. But anyway, that's where the information came from.
Yeah.
And so I decided that once I had all this information, I'd be going to Seattle to do my own little investigation. And when I got up there, I went to this gas station where these guys supposedly work, and one of them, Robert Wraith, his real name's Robert Area,
mm-hmm.
Didn't work there anymore. He'd quit, and I think had moved down to California, or so the story goes.
Yeah.
Well, the Cheryl Chacon character is still working there.
Oh, man.
So I walked in, and I got gas, and I got some coffee and stuff while I was there. Walked up and talked to him briefly, and he didn't want to say anything about the whole thing. He didn't want to talk about it at all.
He must have been surprised to see you.
And the guy's in his workplace, so I respected it. Yeah, he was very surprised. And so I left, and just I figured, okay, well, I'm not going to bother this guy while he's at work.
Yeah.
And that was that. So I confirmed that this Harold Chacon guy worked there. The funny thing is that while I was up there on one of my trips, I stayed with a lady named Kathleen Anderson while I was up there. And Kathleen worked for she was a MUFON member for a long time. She's a pretty good UFO investigator, really nice lady, very sharp. And the funny thing was that at this gas station, Kathleen's brother worked there.
Oh, man.
And so there was all these little ties, you know, to all these other folks. And Kathleen lived, she lived really close to that gas station, about a half a mile. And she told me that, and I talked to her brother, and her brother said, oh, yeah, those guys are talking about that thing all the time in the gas station. And so anyway, I wound up publishing my investigation, and I thought that it had really put a dampener on the story and had finally exposed it for what it was. And the sad thing about this is during this time, in between when he came out and when I published my investigation, people had bought books and videos and paid for lectures and who knows what else from these gentlemen, and were really victimized, in my opinion, by this group of people.
Yeah.
And the odd thing is that I talked to one of the investigators involved in this, a gentleman named Dan McAvoy, who had told me that during a trip down to, I think it was Disneyland, that he and Rutter were out walking around, and Rutter knew quite a bit about the special effects business. He knew how they did all the special effects at these theme parks.
Yeah.
And during this, he told me that, this McAvoy gentleman told me that while they were down there staying at a hotel, he saw one of the credit cards that this Jonathan Reed character was using and saw the name John Rutter on it.
Yeah.
Saw the real name, but for whatever reason didn't say anything. And there were a number of other things that happened in this little circle of investigators. One of the claims was that they had examined this artifact that Reed had supposedly got from the alien, which was this thing called the link. You wore it on your wrist, and it supposedly transported you to another dimension or whatever else.
Mm-hmm.
And they said that they had it examined in a lab and found that it utilized nanotechnology. And one of the other gentlemen that was involved in this, who I had a conversation with, told me that their analysis of this so-called link artifact consisted of a guy who has some kind of science background looking at it through a case and proclaiming that it had nanotechnology.
Oh, man.
And one of the more strange aspects of this that I've heard from a couple of people that were in this little circle was Reed had gone down to Latin America, courtesy of Jaime Maussan, and they had launched this media blitz, where he was on a show called, I believe it is Alto Rojo. And forget my terrible Spanish, but I think it means one more time or something like that. But it said the show is the Tonight Show of Latin America.
Oh, wow.
They've got like 30 million people to watch this show. It's enormously popular down there. It's huge.
Yeah.
And they were on the show for a couple of hours.
Oh, wow.
And got a lot of press attention down there. Well, during the stay down there, Jaime Maussan had hired security people to follow Rutter around because he was afraid that the guy posing as Dr. Reed, he was afraid that somebody was going to come and kill him. The government, you know, the so-called bad guys.
Yeah, yeah.
And during this, they were having lunch, and Rutter got up to go use the bathroom, a.k.a. Dr. Jonathan Reed.
Yeah.
I'm sure this gets confusing for people with all these names. So we'll call him Dr. Reed from here on out. I said that before, and I didn't. So anyway, Dr. Reed gets up to go use the bathroom, and one of the security guys kind of follows him and can see him a little bit in the bathroom, says that Dr. Reed made a fist and hit himself in the face, then ran out to the table they were sitting at saying, "Hey, I just got attacked."
Oh, man.
Well, we never heard about this from any of the investigators because, for me, that would certainly set off a red flag.
Yeah.
Definitely. So there was a lot of stuff that a lot of people didn't wind up hearing about with regard to this whole charade.
Yeah.
So.
And what's happened to Dr. Reed since then? Since he's been exposed as a hoaxer, has he sort of fallen off the map now? Because I haven't heard anything about it in a long time.
Incredibly, he has not. There have been a couple of people down in Florida who have hosted him as a speaker for small private lectures.
Mm-hmm.
So he's still out there floating around, and he republished a book. He has a new video out. I don't think that he's garnering the attention he used to.
Yeah.
And I hope that's because of the investigation that's on my website. I really do, because I'll tell you, this guy, he got a lot of money from a lot of people.
Yeah, exactly.
And after I exposed this, he had issued some very strange statement saying, well, what I said happened really happened, but it happened at another time in another life, and they weren't interested in providing any proof, and that was kind of the end of it. So he's still out there floating around. He was actually at a UFO conference in Nevada walking around with someone last year, and they took a photo of him. And I'm surprised they would even let that guy in the door.
Yeah.
if I ran that conference, I'll tell you what, he would be the last person who would be allowed in there after pulling that charade.
Yeah, exactly.